everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on famine coming to America right after this. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to 38 days. Now, the global 2,000 mad scientists, as I call them, the philosophers, the preachers, the politicians, plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Or so says the Club of Rome. Now, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us, in essentially different words, but essentially the same thing, that false prophets, war, famine, and disease would be coming our way in these end times. Now, in 1920, nearly 50% of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers. They produced their own food, and food for the rest of the world, and food for you and me. Now, today we Americans have chosen to live in the cities. Today, only 3% of us live on the land, and 97% of us then are locked up in the cities and are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2,000 world population control program. These globalists with the genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say let them die for their cause and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available for adult home study on compact disc. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org, just click on to the email, send an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about famine coming to America. When we think about famine, we think about Ethiopia, Libya, Egypt, Chad, Niger, Africa, or Central America, South America, poor countries from the third world. We don't think in terms of famine coming to America. So in the last program, I showed you that the number one famine country on planet Earth is the United States of America. We have a greater famine in America than any other nation in the world. We are wallowing in food. We waste half the food that we grow and produce in the United States. And we have nutritional deficiencies in the United States and the highest rate of disease and sickness of any country in the world. So famine comes in two forms. Form number one that we've discussed already is nutritional deficiencies. And we have talked about what happened to the protein content, for instance, of wheat in Kansas in 1880, which was at 24%. Today it's down to 7 to 13%. Our land is eroding, and we are paving over and using for development a total of 3 million acres a year. So we lose to erosion and sedimentation and salinization, etc., 2 million acres, 3 million acres to being paved over and used in our industrial utilization of our lands and subdivisions and so on. That's 5 million acres a year. So I said there's a physical famine Not only are we suffering from a nutritional famine, but we're also headed for a physical famine here in the United States based upon our public policy. So if you want to follow the numbers, the total amount, the total number of arable acres available for crop production and cultivation in America is 414 million acres. So why don't you write that down, 414 million acres. We're currently using about 338 million acres. So you write down 338 million, that leaves us about 60 million acres that are laying fallow, that are in set-aside programs. All right, now, if you're using 5 million acres a year for development and waste, you take 414 and divide that by 5, and that'll take you to 82.8. So in 82.8 years, we're going to use every last acre in America for subdivisions, highways and freeways, and parking lots, along with the losses, of course, that go to salinization and erosion. If you take the lower number, 338 million acres, it'll take you just 66 years. Isn't that about right? Let's try 338 divided by 5, takes us to 67.6 years. Now, long before 67.6 years or 82 years, there's going to be such a crunch on land and land use that there's going to be a physical shortage of food in the United States. And this doesn't take into account population increases. I'm not sitting here telling you that the Chinese population is going to increase to 2 billion and India to 2 billion, and therefore it's going to put pressures on land and water and so on. That's all part of the equation, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're faced with physical shortages, not just nutritional shortages, but actual physical shortages. Let me read you a little story here. See if I can find it. Can we count on our food supply? Western droughts paved over farms, a growing appetite for food sent over long distances. Let's season our intake with more common sense. Lester Brown of the World Watch Institute has once again warned of looming food scarcity. Measured against consumption, there's just 59 days worth of grain, according to some reports, and the chances of farmers digging their way out of this hole are less than 1 in 10, he says. Now, this has been a refrain of environmentalists since the 1972 warning by the Club of Rome scientists that finite resources in a growing world will lead to collapse. Now, does the recent series of poor harvests mean impending disaster? Well, it's important to be wary of single scary numbers like 59 days of food supply. Harvests in northern and southern hemispheres replenish stores at least twice a year, and politics determines who holds these stocks. Now, it may be more sobering to note that only a few days' supply are in cities at any given time. Food is in constant motion across the globe. Any change in transport, such as fuel prices, immediately affects prices, and breakdown would be disastrous. Panic isn't warranted, but concern is. Agriculture has fed an increasing population, and so far industrial agriculture has pioneered in North America and exported to the world. But in the past 50 years, for the first time since agriculture began, there is now a minority of the world's population now working on farms producing food. Big changes have taken place in how human beings use the earth and how we eat. More than half of the world's agricultural land suffers moderate to extreme soil degradation. Climate change will certainly make yields unpredictable in the future, if not already. Grain supplies may not keep up even as population growth levels off. More people in the global south are adopting meat-intensive diets. In Canada, for instance, animals eat more than three-quarters of all of the grain consumed, not counting exports, of course. China feeds animals less than one quarter of the grain produced in China. Now it takes, when we talk about the amount of grain that it takes to feed animals, it takes more water, more grain, and more land to produce meat than it does grain. It takes 1,000 times as much water to produce a pound of beef as it does a pound of wheat. 1,000 times more water to produce 1 pound of beef as opposed to 1 pound of wheat. You know, those numbers are staggering. And critics of Mr. Brown's position can argue that apart from war zones, more people have food than ever before. The World Health Organization recently proclaimed obesity to be a global epidemic, not just for rich countries or privileged consumers. Diabetes and coronary heart disease are skyrocketing parts of the global south, even as the worst deficiencies shrink. Now, shouldn't we celebrate a nutrition transition that has caused problems of underconsumption to be replaced by problems of overconsumption? Instead of criticizing or defending Mr. Brown's position, let's take two angles on this complex challenge for the global food system to feed the entire world into the indefinite future. First of all, is global sourcing and marketing. The United Kingdom food analyst Tim Lang created food miles as a unit to measure how far food moves before it reaches the kitchen table. Costs of sea freight have fallen 70% since 1980. And the price of air freight falls 3-4% every year. So it is now profitable for many countries to export and to import the same product. For instance, Canada exports 98,000 tons and then turns around and imports 54,000 tons of milk, which 50 years ago would have been done only on a local basis. Now, it may seem less absurd to import fruits and vegetables to cold countries, yet 1 kilogram of asparagus sent from Chile to New York takes 73 kilograms of fuel energy and contributes 4.7 kilograms of carbon dioxide to global warming. Now, FoodShare Toronto, in a study by Stephen Bentley, compared food miles traveled by similar items at the Dufferin Grove Farmers Market and across the street at the Dufferin Mall No Frills Supermarket. The study compared pears shipped 5,887 kilometers from Washington State by way of Los Angeles to the ones that came 58 kilometers from Milton, Ontario, and lamb chops that traveled 72 kilometers from Flamborough to Dufferin Grove Park with those that made a 13,882-kilometer journey from New Zealand to Dufferin Mall. The food miles average of the supermarket items was more than 5,000 times greater than the same items in the farmer's market. And the study calculated that the energy used and the greenhouse gas emissions, depending on how food was transported, and found the imports to be on average almost 400 times greater. Now, a second very novel characteristic of the food system is changing diets. Diseases of overconsumption, such as gout, once afflicted kings who could afford rich food, fatty food, from expensive meat and butter in huge quantities. But now, a simple 99-cent hamburger is about the cheapest meal around in Canada because the price doesn't include ecological or health costs. In the 19th century, farm products passed through the industrial system that created white bread and canned goods. Now, just a few corporations invent the tens of thousands of edible commodities on the supermarket shelves. Along with animal products, this is the reason that fats and sugars account for more than one-third of the calories eaten daily in North America, but less than 10% of calories consumed each day in China. Now, why should people trade too few calories for diets causing chronic disease? It is what we have done in rich countries, and how our health systems are suffering from the crushing weight of trying to help people live with diabetes, heart disease, muscular dystrophy, and Alzheimer's disease. Nutritionists are beginning to argue that low and middle-income countries can skip this phase if they learn from our mistakes as well as our successes. If they promote diets high in fresh fruits and vegetables, they'll save a lot of stress on agriculture and health services. Whether or not food is about to run low for everyone, some changes would increase the quality of life in rich and poorer countries alike. Healthy eating is one. Eating local foods is another, and to ensure local food is available, let's protect our richest farmland from being used for gravel pits and big monster homes. All right, let's pause here and let's think about these statements. After all, this author said, let's use some common sense. In the world, there are the haves and the have-nots. There will always be people who have money, power, and influence. And the people with the money, power, and influence are always going to eat, even if the food has to be shipped 13,887 kilometers from New Zealand to Ontario, Canada. But can everybody in Canada eat from the products that are shipped or flown in from New Zealand? Now, the answer to that is an overwhelming no, they cannot. There isn't enough oil, there isn't enough money in the world to feed everybody in Canada, or everybody in the United States, or everybody in Western Europe off of the tables, or off of the fields of New Zealand, Australia, or Chile. Now, it is certainly possible here in our Western affluent nations, especially the United States, for George Gordon to eat strawberries once a week. Hell, if I wanted to, I could eat strawberries every day, 365 days a year. I can buy them in my supermarket. Now, it's certainly true, we can't produce strawberries in Ozark County, Missouri, 365 days a year. But somewhere in the world, strawberries are growing all the time. And we can load them on a 747 and fly them to Seattle, Chicago, New York, or Montreal. But that does not mean that everybody can afford to buy them. The other day I was in a supermarket and I noticed blackberries were for sale for $2.35. And they're a half a pint, that's a cup. That's $2.35 a cup for blackberries. That's pretty pricey. Now, they had to be flown in. They had to be transported long distances. And today, if you take a look in America, I can tell you for a fact, King Solomon and all of his glory with all of his money and all of his wives and all of the affluence that he had could not eat strawberries 365 days a year. And here I am, little Georgie Gordon, and I can afford to do that. And many Americans can afford to do that. But is it always going to be that way? Or is there going to be a change? Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, there's going to be a change. Now, I would not know, looking in my daily newspaper or watching television, that this change is imminent. It's not being reported by CBS or by USA Today, but it was reported years ago in a book that we call the Bible by a fellow by the name of Ezekiel. Ezekiel, spelled E-Z-E-K-I-E-L, made a report in 591 B.C. With specificity, I can give you the date of the report. The word of the Eternal came expressly unto Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Kibar, and the hand of the Eternal was there upon him. In the fifth day of the month, which was the fifth year of the king Jehoiakim's captivity in 591 B.C. And he said that in the United States of America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, there would be a physical shortage of food. not just a nutritional deficiency, which we're now suffering under. And I showed you that over in Leviticus. Do you remember that in Leviticus 26? Let me read that one to you again for a little special reminder here. I think this is just real special. Leviticus chapter 26, one of the penal clause chapters. He says, When I have broken the staff of your bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver you your bread again by weight, and you shall eat it and not be satisfied. I paraphrased it for you, and I showed you that when I have broken the staff of your bread or taken away the nutritional value of your wheat, 10 women working for the International, the ITT Bakery, that's International Telephone Telegraph Company Bakery, baking Wonder Bread in one block-long oven. That's one of those huge ovens that you stick it into one end and take it out the other. They shall deliver you your Wonder Bread again by weight in 1-pound loaves, and you shall eat that wallpaper paste and not be satisfied because there's no nutritional value in it. Remember that story? That's where we are today. We're wallowing in so much food that we can waste 50% of it. But Ezekiel said, you're going to have a physical shortage of food. You're physically going to be out of food. You're not going to have any Big Macs. There's more to the story. Now, Ezekiel was not a Jew. I've heard this said many times that Ezekiel was a Jew. Verse 3 tells you very plainly, the word of the Eternal came expressly to Ezekiel the priest. The priest. Ezekiel was a Levite, not a Jew. Moses was not a Jew. Moses was a Levite. Now, if you'd like to learn a little more about that, there's a clear historical distinction between Israelites and Jews. It is true that all Jews are Israelites. It is not true that all Israelites are Jews. Now, I know most Christians categorize Israelites as being Jews. And while it's true that all Californians are Americans, it is not true that all Americans are Californians. Now, if you'd like a complete exposé on that subject matter, then you need the book called The Lost 10 Tribes of Israel Found. Now, the tribes of Israel are a different gang of people than the Jews. This is a book written by Stephen Collins called The Lost 10 Tribes of Israel Found. If you want more information, just call the law school and ask us where to get it. We don't sell it here. So oftentimes, you know, when I tell you about books, you call the law school and you say, hey, I want to buy that book. I want to emphasize again that we don't sell books here. We review books and periodicals and papers. And we give a thumbs up or a thumbs down and a recommendation, but we don't sell them here. You'll have to go to Barnes and Noble or to the publisher or to the author or somebody else. But if you call the law school, we will steer you on to, I'll give you the name and address and you can send for it. But now, as we're looking at the question of physical food shortages in America, in the 1930s, specifically on June 5th, 1933, a very important, a very monumental change in economics and international geopolitics occurred with an obscure act of Congress that changed forever in the United States of America the public policy concerning gold and silver coin, and it adopted the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, which we Americans have adopted as if we invented them ourselves. We send our children to public schools, the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, and love it. Now, there are consequences that come from actions. Now, if you smoke a pack of Camel Studs every day of your life from age 18 to age 85, like my grandmother did, that does not guarantee that you're going to get lung cancer. She smoked a pack of Camel Studs from age 18 to 85 and died of a cerebral hemorrhage stroke at age 88. John Wayne smoked Camel Studs. He died from lung cancer. And we don't know whether the lung cancer was caused from the Camel Studs or whether it was caused by secondhand smoke or by the bad air in Los Angeles or something else. But we do know this. We do know that when you take 100 people that smoke Camel Studs, or smoke any brand for that matter, And you take another 100 people that don't smoke at all, that there's a higher incidence of lung cancer among the smokers than there is among the non-smokers. And so those of us that still have brains that function come to a conclusion that probably smoking is bad for your health. And if you're like me, you quit smoking. Now, it is certainly true that I couldn't go into court and prove that those camel studs caused my grandmother's cerebral hemorrhage or that those camel studs caused John Wayne's lung cancer, but I can certainly draw a conclusion from that, and I'm going to avoid camel studs. Now, that's just my conclusion. Well, when we take a look at famine, when I take a look at the public policy of the United States, which has produced food shortages and famines in China and Russia over the last 75 years, and then we Americans adopt this same public policy, I can conclude from that that probably we too will have the same conclusion, the same outcome that the Chinese and the Russians had when they practiced communism, which, by the way, they stopped. After they got so poor in their economies, it turned turtle, they said, well, maybe we better go back to some form of private property, and they have. And the Russians are showing a balance of payment surplus every month. So are the Chinese. It's America still practicing communism that we learned from, remember, the Russians and the Chinese. We're the ones that are suffering the balance of payments deficit every month. Just thought I'd tell you that. When they practiced communism, they had balance of payments deficits. When they stopped practicing communism, they got balance of payment surpluses. So there's a cause and effect relationship there. Now, getting back to Ezekiel, I want to point out that Ezekiel wrote this in 591 to the house of Israel. Let me read that to you. Ezekiel was called a watchman in chapter 3, verse 17 through 21. So he says, Son of man, I have made you a watchman unto the house of Israel, not to Jews, not to Judah, not to that little country over in the Middle East. He says, Son of man, I've made you a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, hear the word at my mouth and give them warning from me. This is not an appeal to you to convert you, to get you to go to church or to give your heart to Jesus or to get religion. It's a message. Nothing more, nothing less. Ezekiel was sent with a message. He's a messenger. He's going to come to you and he's going to tell you, let me tell you where the bear does it. Here's where the rubber meets the road. In verse 18, when I say unto the wicked, you shall surely die, and you give them not warning, nor speak to warn the wicked from his wicked way to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at your hand. Ezekiel, wake up. If you don't give that wicked man warning from me, I will require his spilled blood at your hand. Yet, if you warn that wicked man, and he turns not from his wickedness nor from his wicked way, he shall die in his iniquity. But you have delivered your soul. Now again, when a righteous man does turn his righteousness and commit iniquity, and I lay a stumbling block before him, he shall die because you have not given him warning. He shall die in his sin, and his righteousness which he has done shall not be remembered, but his blood will I require at your hand. Verse 21, nevertheless, if you warn the righteous man that the righteous sin not, and he does not sin, he shall surely live, because he is warned, and also you have delivered your soul. Now, boys and girls, we needed to be warned. We needed to be told that there is a famine coming. Now, this famine is just one of 64 life-threatening problems described in the Scripture. You've heard me make that statement a time or two. And I've said there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the Scripture. So this week I selected famine. That's one of 64 life-threatening problems that you have to deal with. Whether you're righteous or whether you're wicked is beside the point. You've got this problem just like I do. President Bush has this problem. Everybody on planet Earth has this problem. And it's because of the public policy of the United States. It's public policy worldwide to disseminate genetically modified seed, even if we have to force it down the throats of the third world nations. We're going to put genetically modified seed in the ground of every country in the world. Now, I'm not going to stop that. I just want to tell you that there's an ultimate end to that. There's an ultimate consequence to this madness. And when we get to that ultimate end, famine is going to be the result. Now, we're at the halfway point here, boys and girls, and I've got to give you a reminder. You're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page at the website georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log, our schedule, and the archive. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on this program are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or the number at the law school, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Ezekiel. This old boy Ezekiel, now remember, is a Levite, a priest. He's in national captivity in a concentration camp in Babylon. The year is 591 B.C. Now, there's an important reason for this date, because this book, Ezekiel, is written to the house of Israel. Now, here's the history of Israel. Israel are those tribes that are descended from a fellow by the name of Jacob. Jacob had 12 sons. One of his sons was Judah. 1/12 of the family are Jews. The other 11/12 of the family are people like Simeon and Levi. They're people that descended from and now live in places like France, Holland, Denmark, Ireland, Scotland, the United States, Canada, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Switzerland, Germany. They are not living in Israel, they are not Jews, and they are not descended from Judah. They're Israelites. They're a stiff-necked, hard-hearted, rebellious bunch of people. I mean, they are jerks among jerks. And Ezekiel was sent, a priest, a Levite, to the house of Israel. He's in a concentration camp in Babylon. He was taken captive by the king Nebuchadnezzar in a captivity of Jehoiakim in 591. Now, here's what's important about this little history lesson. You see, Israel had already gone into captivity. The nation of Israel, the 10 tribes of Israel, not the Jews, not the Levites, not the Benjaminites, the other 10 tribes went into captivity in 721 B.C., 130 years prior to this prophecy being written. This book of Ezekiel is not written to the Jews today, the Jews yesterday, or the Jews tomorrow. It's written to another gang of people. It's written to the Israelites. It's written to you Canadians and Australians and New Zealanders and you Danish and Germans and Americans. It's written to the 10 tribes of the house of Israel, the stiff-necked, rebellious bunch that will not obey God and keep his commandments. And so as we saw just before the break, Ezekiel was given a revelation. He said, now, this is God speaking. He says, now I want you to go to these people, the Israelites, and I want you to give them a message for me. I want you to tell them where the bear does it. So in Ezekiel chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, we found out who Ezekiel was, the dates of the prophecy. Then I just told you that Israel went into Assyrian captivity in 721 to 718 B.C. See Collins' Lost 10 Tribes of Israel Found. Ezekiel was a Levite, see verse 3, not a Jew. So I told you that part of the story. Ezekiel was a watchman. Ezekiel is a messenger. That's in Ezekiel 3, verses 17 through 21. Ezekiel was written to Israel. That's in chapter 2. So, this is a story that's sent to the house of Israel. Let me show you that. Ezekiel chapter 2 says, and he said unto me, Son of man, stand upon your feet, and I'm going to speak unto you. And the Spirit entered into me, when he spake unto me, and he set me upon my feet, that I heard him that spake unto me. And he said unto me, Son of man, I send you to the children of Israel, to a rebellious nation that has rebelled against me. They and their fathers have transgressed against me even unto this very day. They are an impudent children and a stiff-necked people. I do send thee unto them, and thou shalt say unto them, Thus saith the Lord God. And they, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are a rebellious house, yet shall know that there has been a prophet among them. And you, son of man, be not afraid of them, and neither be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns be with you, and you do dwell among scorpions. Be not afraid of their words, nor be dismayed at their looks, though they be a rebellious house. And you shall speak my words unto them, whether they will hear or whether they will forbear, for they are most rebellious. But you, son of man, hear what I have to say unto you. Be not thou rebellious, like that rebellious house. Open your mouth, and eat that I give thee. And when I looked, behold, a hand was sent unto me, and lo, a roll of a book was therein, and he spread it before me, and it was written within and without, and there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe. Lamentations, mourning, and woe. Alright, so far, so good. Ezekiel, a Levite, in national captivity, in Babylon, is given a message to the house of Israel 130 years after the house of Israel has been taken into national captivity and they have been dispersed to the four winds. Well, that tells us an important part of the story. You see, the book of Ezekiel wasn't written to the house of Israel back in Ezekiel's day. It was written for the house of Israel in the end times. a period of time called the Great Tribulation. And we know that because Jesus told us. Well, when did Jesus tell us? Well, he told us in three places in the New Testament. You see that in Matthew 24, Luke 21, and Mark 13. Write that down, boys and girls. It'll be important for you. You need to know that. Now, when we talk about famine, remember, we think about Joseph. Remember Joseph in Egypt? Well, that story is in Genesis chapter 41 through Genesis chapter 47. So if you want to take a look at this old-timey story that Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God does man live. Now, he cited that from Moses. Moses first said that. Moses wrote that down. It's in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Luke also made that citation. It's in Luke 4, verse 4. Man doesn't live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, let me suggest to you that the book of Ezekiel is one of the words that came out of the mouth of God. Jesus made another statement. He said, this is Jesus. Now, you Christians can listen to this because this is from the New Testament. New Testament. See? I know Christians, they don't believe in the Old Testament. That was abolished, done away with, nailed to the cross with Jesus. That's not what Jesus said, but that's what Christians say. So, Jesus said, man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Now, he said that early on. He said that orally. He said that to Matthew. Jesus said to Matthew, hey, Mac, come on over here. Listen to my words. Man doesn't live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. He cited that directly from Moses in Deuteronomy 8, verse 3. Listen, not one word of the New Testament had been written yet when Jesus uttered those words. Matthew had not written the book of Matthew yet. John had not written the book of Revelation yet. The Apostle Paul had not been converted and not written one of his 14 epistles. Not a word of the New Testament had been written when Jesus uttered the words. He made this statement too. He said, think not that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I didn't come to abolish or to destroy. I came to fulfill. And he said, not one jot or tittle, not one dotted I, not one cross T is going to fail from the law until all of this is fulfilled. And Ezekiel has not been fulfilled yet, boys and girls. The house of Israel has not gone through the famine, one of the 64 life-threatening problems that we all face. We haven't gone through that yet. Let me show you that. In Matthew chapter 24, the apostles, you know, the disciples, they came up to Jesus and they said, hey, boss, give us some information here. Jesus went out of the temple. This is Matthew 24, verse 1. And he departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, do you see all these things? Truly I say to you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. Now, if you go over there today on the Temple Mount, you'll see the foundation of Solomon's temple still there, one stone upon another. So the next time somebody says to you, Jesus could come tonight, one of two things is wrong based upon the statement that Jesus just told you. Listen to this again. He was talking about that very temple. Jesus said to them, do you see all these things? Truly I say to you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. Hell, there's hundreds of stones in that Wailing Wall that haven't been thrown down. So one of two things. Jesus did not know what he was talking about and had his head at the wrong end of his rectal region, or he did know what he was talking about, and not all of the stones have been thrown down yet. It's an event that's going to occur at some point in the future, and he ain't coming back until every last one of those stones and that Wailing Wall have been torn down. Now the Jews are over there preparing to rebuild the new temple on the site that is now known as the Dome of the Rock. I covered that with you here a couple of weeks ago, called the Abomination of Desolation. The Dome of the Rock is coming down, boys and girls, at some point in time. And the Wailing Wall is coming down, boys and girls, at some point in time. And Jesus ain't coming back until every one of those rocks in that Wailing Wall have been knocked down. How do I know that? Well, because that's what he told me here in verse 2 of Matthew 24. Well, it's either that or he was a liar, or if he wasn't a liar, he just had his head up the wrong end and didn't know what the hell he was talking about. Well, one or the other. So let's just face reality. So if you go to church every Sunday and you believe in Jesus, he made an observation in Luke 6, verse 46. He said, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say?" Remember that? How come you don't believe what I tell you? Now he went on in verse 3, says, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, his disciples came to him privately, saying, Well, tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world? And he answered and said to them, You take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many." Well, you can go to church next Sunday, and somebody will say, "Oh, give your heart to Jesus today." Yeah, they're all out here proclaiming all about Jesus and the name of Jesus and all. That's what he said would be going on. He said, they'll be out here telling you, but they'll be deceiving you. He said, now pay attention. Don't let anybody deceive you here. Because many are going to come in my name, saying that they're Christians, saying that they're followers of Christ, and they shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all of these things must come to pass, but the end isn't yet. Now in the 20th century, we've seen dozens of wars. I mean wars and wars and wars and wars. Two big wars, like World War I and World War II and Vietnam. That's just the Americans. And then there were a lot of other people fighting, you know, like the Jews and the Arabs, you know. He said, don't be too concerned about that. The end isn't yet. You're going to have these wars and rumors of wars. You're going to have a lot of deception, a lot of people talking about Jesus and he said in verse 7, "For nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in diverse places." All right. Now, you've got pestilence, that's disease. You've got earthquakes, and you've got famines. Those three, remember I said there's 64 life-threatening problems. Disease is certainly one of those life-threatening problems. Now, if you die from Alzheimer's disease, or if you die from pneumonia, multiple sclerosis, muscular dystrophy, heart attack, stroke, cancer, or something else, you've died from one of these pestilences. And the only way you can get one of these pestilences is if you're starving to death, when your immune system is impaired and weakened. And your death certificate isn't going to say, well, old Joe died from starvation over here. It's going to say, old Joe died from cancer. Old Joe died from muscular dystrophy, multiple sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease, or something else. Now, if you've got one of these diseases, you're starving to death, and your immune system doesn't work. That's why I told you in the last program, you need to get on a juice program. Juice. Remember juice and open pollinated seed. When you go to Leviticus 19, verse 19, God told you, don't, can you, know? What is it apart about know that you don't understand, or don't? Mingle your seed. And so we're out here mingling our seed, and we go to the grocery store and we buy hybridized this and hybridized that, and come on the TV and they say, this is a new improved hybrid. Woo, boy, that's what we want. This new improved hybrid. That's why I told you about Baker Creek heirloom seeds. You remember that? Baker Creek heirloom seeds is the place that you go to get the seeds that Leviticus 19:19 tells you you want to buy. They're called open pollinated seeds. Let me give you that guy's name and number again. His name is Jerry Gettle, and he's at area code 417-924-8917. That number again, 417-924-8917. That's Baker Creek Heirloom Seeds. You need these heirloom seeds so that you can plant those seeds in your own soil so that you can get the produce, the foodstuffs, that have the vitamins and minerals that will prevent you from getting these sicknesses and diseases spoken of here in Matthew 24:7. That number again, 417-924-8917. Now remember, the other half of that equation was, if you're already sick, you need to improve your immune system rapidly. You need to overcome this famine. You need to overcome this nutritional deficiency, and the best way to do that is from juicing. Remember that? I told you about the Green Star juicer in the juice article. I told you about that yesterday. The guy that I recommend is Brian Nevius. Remember that guy? Brian Nevius. He's one of my students. He's got a phone number too. His number is 309-473-2141. So if you'd call Brian and say, Brian, I'm sick. I weigh 340 pounds. I'm starving to death. I need nutrition. I need food. Can you help me? And I think Brian Nevius can help you. I think he can tell you, well, no, here's what you gotta need, gotta do, and he can send you the books and papers and you can get the information that you need. And in about 90 days, I mean, you're not gonna lose 300 pounds in 90 days, but in about 90 days you can turn this around. You can turn starvation into well-nourished in 3 months. This guy's name is Brian Nevius and his telephone number is 309-473-2141. Again, 309-473-2141. Now that's to overcome this problem of famine. Now, Ezekiel comes along and he says, we're going to have a physical famine. I mean, we're not going to have Big Macs in the Big Mac store. How do I know that? Well, Ezekiel uses the word famine 13 times. And there's two chapters, Ezekiel 5 and 6, that tell us with specificity what God is going to do. Remember, Ezekiel now is getting a message. You got this message from God. In Ezekiel 5 and 6, a couple of short chapters, you can read them here in just 5 minutes. And I probably won't have time to do it in this program, but I'm going to start off here. And let's take a look in Ezekiel chapter 5. Where he says, and you, son of man, I want you to take a sharp knife, and I want you, like a barber's razor, sharp knife like a barber's razor, and I want you to pass upon your head and upon your beard, and then take you balances to weigh and divide the hair. And you shall burn with fire a third part in the midst of the city when the days of the siege are fulfilled. And you shall take a third part and smite it with the knife, and a third part you shall scatter in the wind, and all draw out a sword after them. A sword. That's a takeoff for war. And with fire in the midst of the city, that's the destruction. These hairs represent people. How do I know that? Okay. The Bible is written in code, so write this down, boys and girls. Sharpen your pencil on both ends, and I'm going to give you that code. It's in the book of Isaiah, so flip back here. If you're in the book of Ezekiel, you want to flip back to Isaiah chapter 28. Isaiah, back, that is toward the front of the book. And you go back two books. It's Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, or Ezekiel, Lamentations, Jeremiah, and then Isaiah. Isaiah chapter 28. Now the Bible is written in code, and it's written in code so that you can't understand it. That's right. That's right. And I'm just giving you a report. I'm not asking you to believe me because I'm some great scholar. I've never been to cemetery. I've never been to college. I don't know jack squat about what they teach here in the theological institutions of the United States. So I thought I'd get my theology from the Bible rather than from Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, or Jerry Falwell. Then the three of them together couldn't find their ass at high noon with a road map. Got that? The three of them together couldn't find their heinies with a road map. As we're relating it to the scripture, of course. Isaiah 28. Turn over to verse 9 and listen to this. Whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will I speak to this people. Then there's an inset verse, verse 12, and then the final conclusion is, verse 13, he says, But the word of the Eternal was unto them precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little, that they might go and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken. Now, for you Christians, I know you can't believe that because that's from the Old Testament. So let me cite that very same story from Paul in, I believe it's 2 Thessalonians 2:11. Let me see if I'm right. Here's 1 Thessalonians. Now, this Thessalonians is a letter which was written to the Thessalonians by Paul. And in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 11, he says, For this cause God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie. You mean to tell me that God would send you good people out there strong delusion so that you would believe a lie? So that you'd believe Billy Graham, Oral Roberts, and Jerry Falwell, and that they would lead you astray? Huh? Now, I didn't write this, boys and girls. I'm just a reporter. Now, Isaiah told us the story first. Now, remember, all Scripture is given by inspiration of God. Well, that's what God told us. Wasn't inspired by Paul, Peter, James, John, or Moses. It was inspired by God, and Peter, Paul, James, Moses were all secretaries, just like Ezekiel. Notice here in Ezekiel chapter 1, he said, Hey, Zeke, come on over here and listen up. I got a message for you. Go deliver it. Don't be concerned about these jerks when they give you some static. So I'm going to give you a forehead like flint. You'll be as hard and as tough as nails. Now here's what Isaiah 58 is telling you pretty plainly. It says over here very plainly, Whom shall he teach knowledge, and whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Then they're weaned from the milk and drawn from the breasts. So you people that are on the milk of the word, you can close this up and go back to watching The Edge of Night. For precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little and there a little. The Bible is written in code, boys and girls, and this is the code. Here a little and there a little. And it has to be code pled out. So when you see a code word, you look up that code word, and somewhere in the Bible, there will be a scripture that will tell you what the meaning of that code word is. So when we get back over to Ezekiel next time, we'll go through and we will code plead out chapter 5 and 6, and I'm going to show you who this is being written to, and what these hairs are, and who these hairs represent, and what this siege represents. Trade war, boys and girls. That siege represents trade war, your inability to pay your balance of payments debt. Public policy. Now we're about out of time. Let me give you a reminder, and then we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We're open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. And remember, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, there's the signal that says my time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.